This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey, good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday to you here on Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester. We've got Max Power producing for us on KFH, taking your calls at 869-1240. You can leave your video comments to us on our video streams, which you'll find, of course, on 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X, all the different places. Glad to have those available to you. And then, of course, on the Odyssey app, there's a little microphone. You can leave us voice messages. We are excited to get things going today. Not excited particularly about the way the Royals are playing right now. We'll dig into that. We've got a couple of guests coming up. Our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, will join the program in the next hour, as well as Wichita Thunder general manager Joel Lamerno, who is getting ready as the Thunder get ready for the playoffs for the first time in a while. So we will get the latest there and look ahead. They will get some home playoff games in that series, but that should be a lot of fun as well. So we'll have that coming up for you in the next hour. KU lands a basketball player out of the portal. We'll get you the latest there and all kinds of good stuff. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Hey, happy Thursday. We've got, again, a lot to get to on the program today. And I know we're going to talk a lot of Royals, a lot of Major League Baseball here on the show today. But we can't forget the NFL draft is knocking on the door. We're on the doorstep of the NFL draft. So just around the corner as well, that I know we'll, I'm sure, spend some time on. Also, a lot to get to on the show today.
Yeah, I just heard the NFL update right before we came on, and you know, Travis Hunter, and I'm surprised that he needs to come out so aggressively to playing both ways. Is there really an NFL team that wants to take him and not let him play both ways?
Well, I think a lot of teams are probably not wanting him to play both ways. They want to protect him. You know, they feel like I think a lot of teams are probably thinking they're protecting him from himself a little bit, and also probably protecting their interest also with the amount of money they're probably going to pay him. Hey, that's like double the time that he's going to be on the field, double the chance of injury, all of that. So I can see a lot of teams wanting to take a conservative approach.
I think that's absurd. It's not apples to apples with Shohei Ohtani, but you've got a guy that is good enough to play both ways and has the conditioning and the ability to do it. Why wouldn't you do it? I don't, it's a part of the appeal of taking him so high. I don't understand it. I assume teams would rather him be a receiver, But if he can be both, like, why would you not want him to be both? Like, he can save you money if he's a if he's able to develop into a premier player both ways. I can't imagine the team that selects him says, okay, but now you don't get to do this other thing you're really good at that we know you want to do. Like, I cannot imagine that's going to happen. But it's interesting to see him come out this aggressively. I've just always thought of him as a two-way player. I've never thought of him as just a receiver or just a corner, ever. Look at some of the greats. Like, guys have done this forever. Most of the time, they've been premier corners that doubled over to receiver. You know, you go back to Prime and Dennis Green. What was the old Commander's corner? He would jump over to the offense occasionally. We've seen it over the years where these guys have been able to double up a little bit, but give him a shot. Let him try it. If he's not good enough to be, you know, one or the other, that's a different story, right? If he doesn't think he's good enough, or if the team doesn't think he's good enough, that's one thing. You're not protecting him from anything. That's a part of what he is.
I mean, I think that a lot of the time when you've had players that are playing, you know, on a couple of different phases of the game, you've got them either as an offensive or defensive player, and then they're doing special teams as well. They're a high level kick returner. That, you know, Deion, like when he was in college, for example, at Florida State, you know, he was a cornerback, but then he also was a punt returner and was great at both of those things. We see that quite a bit. I mean, that's pretty standard at not only the collegiate level, but the NFL as well. And you've got players that are high level receivers or they're high level defenders in the secondary, and then they can also go in and play special teams. I think teams are far more comfortable in allowing that sort of thing to happen than they would be having their, and I get it. Look, I think that it's also a little bit of a you know, contingency plan or safety net for some of these teams to think, okay, like if we're going to use potentially the number two overall pick or number three overall pick, we need to protect our investment and not let this guy on the field for every single, basically snap of every single game playing on both sides. I think it does in their minds, you know, probably bumps their risk up a little bit in this guy getting hurt and their investment going down the drain. So I understand Travis Hunter's desire. I think there are going to be teams that are going to let him do it. He'll probably be okay. I think eventually he'll settle into probably one phase or the other, and it may take a couple of years to get there. But I understand teams being a little hesitant and not wanting him to do that.
Yeah, I don't. I just don't, not while he's young. And the other thing is, like, are you that confident that you know what he'll be better at? Right? I'd say while he's young and early in his career, let that man play. That's what he's always done. I use Shohei Ohtani as the comparison. It is comparable in the sense that sometimes I feel like teams have got to get out of their own way. You know, if a player is good enough to do it and it's not holding them back at the other spot, which with Travis Hunter, we've seen throughout his college career that it's not going to hold him back. And, you know, the thing that would hold him back is if he's good enough to do both in the NFL. But if he's good enough to do both in the NFL, what, like, you're investing, you're protecting an investment. You mentioned special teams. Guy's more likely probably to get hurt as a return man than a cornerback. So just let him go.
By
the
way,
play if he's good enough.
I did a little bit of fact checking here. Coach Prime, Deion, when he was in the NFL, very rarely played wide receiver. There was one season with the Cowboys,
right,
in 1996, he was a two-way player that one year, but he was like their fourth wide receiver, didn't really get on the field doing that a whole lot. But other than that one year, he very rarely was a receiver.
Because he wasn't good enough to be a receiver solely, right? Like, that's the thing.
And he he was the first two-way player that one season in 96 since the 1960s. Like, this sort of thing is not common whatsoever.
Well, outside of like gimmicky stuff like Refrigerator Perry,
sure.
Troy Brown's probably the best example. Troy Brown played some meaningful snaps at corner for Bill Belichick. Belichick did it probably more than anybody. He did it with Vrabel. He had special teams guys obviously be such a big deal, but Troy Brown's a good example. Look, Travis Hunter can come play wide receiver, but if he can help you in nickel packages, I mean, does he need to be your starting shutdown corner? If he's good enough to do it, I would say yes. I don't know if he is or he isn't, but he can at least go into packages and help you defensively. I don't understand.
I mean, Troy Brown, like, he was primarily a receiver and very rarely played as a defender.
He would go in and help. But again, Troy Brown was also not nearly as good a prospect defensively or offensively, quite frankly, as Travis Hunter is. It's like, if he's good enough to do it, do it. If he's not good enough, that's fine. But if he is, why wouldn't you let him be helpful to your team in two different ways? I don't like protecting football players from injury. They're football players. Like, quarterback is one thing because they take hits to the blind side and they get free shots on everybody else. Like, it's football. Like, players are going to get hurt no matter how much you try to protect them. Anyway, I didn't anticipate starting that way, but it was in that NFL update. Maybe we'll get more into this. We certainly will before the draft. I don't know about today. When we come back, though, we'll talk Royals. Swept by the Yankees. Frustrating. We'll hit it next.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Jake Albrocht and Tommy Caster. We are glad to be with you here on KFH, the Kansas fan headquarters. Thanks to Prairie Fried Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every day on the program here. Let's talk Royals, Tommy. Swept by the Yankees. Road woes continue. And again, you get late into a game. The Royals, the Royals doing well for themselves, tied up at three. This time it was the seventh inning. I looked yesterday. It was pretty crazy. I was like, we keep saying the sixth inning has been bad. How bad has the sixth inning been? It's been real bad. Yesterday, I don't know if you saw this graphic I made and then tweeted out. Here's where the Royals stand in the sixth. Okay. From a pitching perspective, they are 29th in baseball with an 8 ERA in the sixth inning. Their whip in the sixth inning is 1.83. They walked 11 dudes in that inning. Those are both near the bottom of baseball, tied for, the worst, second to worst, I should say. Batting average against, teams are hitting almost 300 against them in that inning. It's not just that either. They're not scoring any runs in the sixth inning, 27th in baseball. Their sixth inning has been a disaster on all fronts. So we weren't wrong about that. Well, it was the seventh inning last night. But it was the same scenario. It was the seventh inning, though, and the Royals fall 4-3. Aaron Judge with the difference-making home run in the seventh. As Schreiber came out for, a second inning, basically, to face Aaron Judge for some reason. And then Daniel Lynch comes out and goes scoreless. It was good to see Zerpa get a clean inning. We've been kind of wanting that a little bit. But Tommy, Lucas Ursig is on this team and has not pitched since April 13th. And in that game, he has not pitched a full inning since April 10th. Since April 10th, the dude has given up two base runners in five innings. Why is he on this team if he is not going to help you when you need him the most? He's not tired. He's not overworked. Aaron Judge is up in a clean inning. And in the seventh inning, in an ideal world, this is the only time that you have to face Aaron Judge. Why is Urcig not in these spots? I don't understand it. It's infuriating.
I mean, the only thing that I can think of, you and I talked about this last night as the game was going on, is that Mac Cutrero clearly doesn't view Lucas Urcig as a Swiss Army knife type reliever that can come in different areas, in different situations, in different innings. To me, I'm not saying that I agree with Mac Cutrero, but to me, it sure seems like Cutrero wants to use Lucas Urcig in the eighth inning. In the eighth inning for him and Estevez in the ninth inning. That's, you know, I think a set role in a set inning for those guys, that seems to be the direction that Mac Cutrero at least is wanting to go. And I'm talking about those situations when the Royals have the lead. I think the big reason why we haven't seen Lucas Urcig in a week or, you know, a few days at least to pitch a full inning is because the Royals haven't had a lead in the eighth or ninth inning. And that's why we haven't seen him as of late. So I mean, that's the only thing that I can think of. One other thing that I will point out before you respond to that is that while, yes, I would have liked to see Urcig in that spot against Aaron Judge, if you want, I'm just trying to think of Matt Cutrero's mindset here. If you want to hold on to Urcig and Estevez, hopefully with a lead in the eighth or the ninth, or even a tie ball game in the eighth or the ninth, and Hunter Harvey's on the shelf, your next best option outside of Daniel Lynch is John Schreiber. So it's not like he threw Chris Stratton in there. It's not like he threw Sam Long out there. Zerpa didn't come in to face Aaron Judge. John Schreiber's been pretty good this year. He hasn't been the best in the bullpen, but he hasn't been a disaster like some of these other guys. So I would have liked to see Urcig, but there were far worse options to face Aaron Judge than John Schreiber.
Sure. And Aaron Judge, you're trying to go, you know, you're trying to go righty-righty there with Schreiber instead of Daniel Lynch. I get that. But the thing about all of this is, why don't they think Urcig is good in that spot? It's literally what he did for this team last year. Cutrero used Urcig all over the place. Wouldn't just make him a regular traditional closer. If he needed him earlier in a game, he did it all the time. Pitched multiple innings all the time. Came in and bailed dudes out all the time. Like, it's not like this is unprecedented. Urcig did it for this team last year. That's what I can't figure out.
They didn't have any other options, though. Like, there weren't, you know, Harvey was on the shelf. They didn't have Estevez. Daniel Lynch wasn't pitching from the bullpen. I'm just saying, like, it's kind of apples and oranges comparing the bullpen last year with Urcig as really the only guy that they had that could get things done in high-leverage situations versus what they think they have this year.
Well, it's not working, and Harvey is on the shelf now. Look, I get it. Like, if the Royals get to the point in this season where they can extend it out and have some ability to sort of go like Lynch, Harvey, Urcig, Estevez, great. I hope that happens. That there, obviously, Royals fans know there is value in having that, right? They reached two World Series on that sort of bullpen philosophy. But the problem right now is you can't, they're not able to get it to that point, right? It's not, they're not consistently doing it, and they keep finding this spot in the middle of the game where they blow a lead or they can't get it to the 7-8-9 or 8-9 with the lead. That's been the problem. So right now, while you're trying to piece it together until Harvey comes back, when you're facing a situation where it's whether it's the sixth inning and you got to have an out, or the game's going to get away from, especially the way the offense is struggling right now. Or if last night you're in the seventh inning, that means in a perfect world, you would face all of their hitters one time. I know that's not, you know, that's, you're asking for a perfect world there, and that's okay. But at least with Judge up, go with another righty that's really good and can get him out.
Who's another righty that's really good in that scenario?
Who's
another righty that's really good in that?
Okay. Urszic, yeah. No, you don't have to go to Lynch. Lynch is a lefty. I get that. But you like, I'm going strength on strength there. I hope that by the end of this season, they can assign innings to players. I've never fully believed in that philosophy. I've always been a use your best when you need them the most. But I absolutely understand and am on board with set roles in a bullpen. The Yankees dynasty was built on it. When the Rangers in the early 2010s went to two World Series, they were built on it. The Royals went to two World Series. I get it, and I understand psychologically why that's a good way to go. The problem for the Royals is they don't have all their horses to do that right now. And so especially when you're reeling like this, like you're reeling, like you need a little boost.
Here's the elephant in the room as well. At the end of the day, I would feel a whole hell of a lot more comfortable with the situation that the Royals found themselves in last night if there was any shred of hope that the offense could get them back into the game. You know, because like a solo home run in the seventh inning from Aaron Judge off John Schreiber, like that's not ideal. Absolutely it's not. But it's a one-run deficit. And to your point, you said it earlier, Daniel Lynch came in and pitched a scoreless inning, and Zerpa did the same thing. So the other relievers kept them in the ballgame. It wasn't like the Yankees blew it wide open. But you and I, again, were talking last night, and I'm like, man, to me, it's like I don't have a whole lot of confidence or optimism right now that the offense can even come back one run down, much less two, three, four runs down. You know, so like that's another elephant in the room for sure. I would have a whole lot less issue with the bullpen usage and the way that Matt Cotrero is deploying these arms in the bullpen. And I honestly wouldn't have been like, I wouldn't be upset with them holding Urszic and not throwing him in that scenario if I felt like, okay, no big deal. Like the Royals offense is, you know, coming, they've got three more chances or two more chances, whatever it is, to get back into the game offensively. The offense has not shown that they can do that. They can't drive in runs. Now, it was a little bit better earlier in the game, right? Like they were able to get some runs across early, but we've not seen a whole lot of success with Kansas City down and coming back offensively late in the game so far this season. That's the elephant in the room as well.
Sure.
Where it'd be different if we felt like there was some, you could put the monkey on the back of the offense to get you back into a game. That's not the way that they're hitting right now.
100% agree. When things are ideal, the Royals can do that. They're not ideal right now. And they should have had more offense early in the game too. They keep letting these teams off the hook when they have their backs up. They had Clark Schmidt up against the wall and they let him off the hook in the first inning last night. And so, yeah, I agree with you. In a perfect world, that's great. They're not in a perfect world right now. You have to be adaptable. I hate using this word. I can guarantee you the last two nights, if those two situations were the exact same, the bullpen would not be handled that way. It wouldn't be. Like, there's no chance you're not throwing somebody like Urszic against Judge in that situation in a postseason game. There's no chance, based on what we've seen, Zerpa comes in with the bases loaded in the sixth on Tuesday night. No chance. So don't do it now. Like, don't let this, and I get, this is a tough stretch of games. We know that. There, it's not like it, you know, they're close enough to 500 here through the schedule that they've played that everything is fine. You just become, but that same schedule can get away from you real quick. And so you got four games coming up here against Detroit. Treat them like playoff games, right? Like they need to, it's early in the year, but you got to have some wins here. You've got to salvage this road trip. You got to at least split this series. So go out there and treat him that way. Let the offense eat. Hopefully they loosen up a little bit. I don't know what the ultimate answer is offensively. I really don't. Other than it's a streaky team again this year, and at some point they're going to explode for a ton of runs over a week or two. We'll be like, oh, okay, the offense is great. We're probably going to ride this offensive roller coaster all year again without, you know, with the exception of making a trade and bringing in another bat somewhere in the corner outfield. Like, that's probably just the way it's going to be this year. but they have to be able to mitigate this. And if that's the case, they cannot let these games get away from them when they do get a little offense and establish an early lead. They just can't. And that's too much pressure to put on the pitchers, starters, bullpen. It's unfair, but it is what it is. If you have a chance to win a game late, you got to do everything you can to get that done. And throwing some of these dudes out there when Tommy Ursic has not pitched meaningful baseball since the 10th. We're talking a full week. Your best pitcher, arguably, has not pitched in a week. That does not make any sense.
They haven't had situations where
I think they've had two.
Well, what I'm saying, the situations that you would think Matt Quatrero wants to put Lucas Ursic in
right.
with the lead to hold the lead in the eighth inning. They've not been in that situation since Sunday. You know, it was the finale against the Guardians. They haven't been in those situations before then or after then. Expectation-wise, I said going into this road trip, this 10-game stretch, that when you're on the road, if you can split, if you can go 500, then you feel like that's a win. They got a lot of work to do to get to that point. It's not out of the woods, but they got to sweep Detroit in Detroit, and I think that's unlikely for them to do. So you have to salvage this road trip as best as you can. The only silver lining, the only light at the end of the tunnel for the Royals is that once you get through this stretch, you get back home against the Rockies. The Rockies are not very good, so you can reset a little bit. Then you've got Houston coming in, and then you're back on the road again. So it's another short homestand for Kansas City before you're right back on another road trip. I think one of the things to keep in perspective, remember last year, when the Royals were able to get out to that hot start and you're like, okay, like this team might be for real. They're winning games and they're contending in the division and all of that early on in the season. They played a lot of games against the White Sox early on in the season last year. The White Sox are the worst team in baseball. They were last year. They are this year. They have not played the White Sox yet. They don't play the White Sox until second weekend of May is the first time they actually play the White Sox. So you've got winnable games coming up. It's a really, really tough stretch of baseball right now. I'm not trying to let the Royals off the hook. I'm not trying to say that, this isn't important. This stretch isn't important because it absolutely is. You're playing playoff teams on the road. It's going to be extremely difficult, but there is some light at the end of the tunnel once they can get through this stretch. But you've got to try to salvage this road trip now as you head to Detroit.
I totally agree. I mean, it's not... there's no panic needed or anything. This is as much a product of the schedule as anything else. They're facing good pitching. If you're worried about the offense, they're facing good pitching almost every day right now because they're playing good teams. One other thing on the bullpen, and you said this, like they haven't been in the situation where Ursig's been able to pitch in the week. That philosophically, that's always been my problem with that idea. Is your hamstring? I mean, could you imagine doing that with a starting pitcher, right? Like, I don't understand why you would ever allow anything to work where your best players don't play for that long a period of time. You can't do that.
I mean, don't you think that it's a similar situation to, an NFL coach leaving a timeout in his pocket, you've got it, like use it, because it's not like you can save it for the next game. It's not like you can, like, it's a use it or lose it type situation in that particular setting. I know it's not exactly the same, but to me, it kind of strikes as that. Like if you leave a guy on the bench and you're like, all right, we're going to keep you there and we'll use you when we need you, but he's your best pitcher out of the bullpen. Like I get it. Like I understand the criticisms of the bullpen usage, especially last night. I will just say again, I'll just repeat it, that there were far worse options than going to John Schreiber in that bullpen. I don't hate that move. If you are going to, if you're going to die on that hill of Lucas Ursic is our eighth inning guy and we're not going to use him in any high leverage situation, I would say Schreiber or Lynch then are your next best options. And it just so happened that, of course, they're Schreiber's facing Judge and Judge takes some yard.
Right. Yeah, it's not this. None of this is a knock on Schreiber. Schreiber's been fine this year, and Schreiber may end up being their sixth inning option if it's not Lynch. It's not against him. It's nothing against him. It's strictly that Ursic hasn't pitched in a week, and there have been two situations in the last two nights where he could have helped them win a game. Absolutely could have helped them win a game. Not maybe he can if they have a lead in the eighth. No, you had two situations where a guy who did this for you last year, right? This is what Urcic did when they brought him over last year. One of the big reasons they reached the postseason is Lucas Urcic, and they used him that way then. Where do we need him? Because, listen, like, it would have been real easy to just make him the closer and only the like, they could have done that last year, and they didn't do it. Why? Because they needed him in other places, and they have absolutely needed him in other places the last two nights. And the alternative is you lose games and he doesn't even get a chance to pitch. Your best pitcher, at least your best bullpen pitcher, doesn't even get a chance to help you win a game. Now, for almost a full week, that's not going to work. Not until Hunter Harvey comes back, not until the offense picks it back up. If they get into a good stretch of baseball where they can make these six-inning games, great. I am on board with that all day long. That is not the situation this team faces right now. They have to do something different. They just got swept. And they're all close games, too. That's the other infuriating part about it. I was listening to the game here on KFH last night, and they're talking about it. Like, Jake Eisenberg on the call.
Yeah.
Like, how many of these games, these close games, can these two teams play? You mentioned MJ Melendez, Tommy. I actually think the confidence might be coming. He had the home run in the game in the middle of the series last night. That was a good, that, you know, that was a ball that a lot of times gets down and ties the game up for the Royals. I think he's at least getting a little more confident. We'll see if he can get on the kind of surge he was on last year after the dreadful start, which, by the way, lasted a long time last year. But they could use it. They could use it. We said this yesterday. I think they can work through one of Melendez and Renfro starting slow. I don't know if they can do both again. And right now it's both. And I think it's more likely that Melendez is a meaningful contributor to this offense long-term than Renfro. So hopefully he does. But I think you feel very differently that he's not close to that right now.
Well, I don't think that, even him hitting the ball hard, which he did in the ninth inning, and it was a great catch, don't get me wrong, and it could have been the game-tying hit for Melendez. He's not finding, you know, the production. He's not finding the spots. I mean, yeah, he had a home run two nights ago, but then he didn't do anything else in that game, and he was 0-for-4 in the game last night. That makes it really tough. I would also say, and you mentioned Melendez and Renfro, I think the one person who's probably probably, you know, doesn't mind that Renfro and Melendez are struggling is Michael Massey, because the attention's not on him. He has not had a good start to the season either, but everybody's focused on Melendez and Renfro for good reason, and Massey has really struggled also. And that's a key contributor offensively outside of the big four, outside of the top four of that lineup that, you know, contributed at a, you know, large clip last season, and he hasn't been able to get done so far this year through the first 17, 19 games of the season for Kansas City. So that's a big issue as well. It's not been consistent, the bottom half of the lineup at all. That was my biggest concern going into this season, more so than the rotation, more so than anything else. It was, what are they going to do from 5 to 9 in that lineup? And they just haven't been able to get it done.
Yeah, and Jonathan India deserves, you know, he was off to a great start. He's not been nearly as good. I don't know why, but I'm going to keep watching Brady Singer for that, just because it's always been such an interesting trade. Brady Singer's been really good for the Reds, really good.
The only thing I'll say about India that gives, you know, me a little bit of more optimism, and that I'm not willing to throw a ton of criticism on him, is that even though India lately has not been hitting, he's been getting on base. I mean, his on-base percentage is pretty good. He's walking. That's his job, is to get on base. I don't care how you do it, as long as you're getting on base and you're setting the table for those guys. And he's still been able to do that. He's found ways to get on base, even if he's not currently hitting well. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, he needs to be. I mean, he needs to be hitting better too. But yes, he is salvaging it. But Brady Singer, Royals fans, if you're wondering and haven't been paying attention, has been very good in Cincinnati. Okay. Let's talk about Melvin Council Jr., the latest KU. He is the third addition through the transfer portal. They have four more spots to go. You sent this to me last night, and I don't know anything about Melvin Council Jr. Didn't watch any St. Bonaventure. Don't believe they made the tournament last year, which would be the time that you would normally see them play. It's been a good program over the year. Guy scored almost 15 points a game. 15 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Like, you like all of that. What gets interesting to me, and right when you sent it to me and I start to look him up, he's not a shooter. Like, he does not shoot the three ball well at all, over 2 years in college now. So that's not going to be something which we know KU needs, right? We've learned this. KU needs some shooters. He's not going to be it. So then I'm like, and I text you this. I was like, okay, well, is he a point guard? Because I could see them using like a depth piece at point guard behind Aaron Peterson. If you don't want him bringing the ball up every single time, like, that makes sense. And he told me that he was off the ball guard. And I'm like, so they brought in a guard that can't shoot, that isn't a point guard. And then you hear about his defense, and that's where it makes sense. Melvin Council Jr. I'm looking, like, he's not on 24/7, which is where I usually go. Like, he's not even in the top 50 transfer prospects out there right now. So this is not like a headline move, but Bill Self compared him to Tyshawn Taylor and said he has a chance to be one of the elite defenders we've seen at KU in recent years. So look, I'm on board with that. I'm on board with big time defense, especially if they're going to rely so heavily on young players. Bring me a defender. I'm on board with it. We know Bill Self will find great defenders time on the floor. So I'll give it a B. Like, I don't, it's not an earth shattering move, but an elite defender that could become a rotation guy. Yeah, they're going to need that.
Yeah, I think it's an important move. I don't know if it's an earth shattering move, but I certainly think it's an important move. I think really, to me, it's more of the philosophy behind them bringing in Council than Council himself. If you look at the guys that Bill Self has brought in the last couple of years, you could really see a trend, right? Especially going into the last offseason, into last season. I mean, he went for the top shooters in the portal. That's who Bill Self went after. Like, you're talking Rylan Griffin, AJ Story. You're talking about these guys. Zeke Mayo was a prolific scorer. Like, he was looking at those guys to come in and be the assassins, if you will, offensively for the Jayhawks, and it didn't work. It kind of went away from the philosophy that, you know, of like quote unquote Bill Self guys, you know, that are those junkyard dogs and that are big time defenders and that, you know, aren't even necessarily flashy players. That's what Rylan Griffin and AJ Storr specifically were, and it didn't work for the Jayhawks. And you knew going into last season that's what Kansas was going to prioritize, because they couldn't score two seasons ago and they wanted to try to find some guys who could help them in that regard. So they sort of went away from the philosophy that's kind of been Jayhawk basketball for a long time. I think Melvin Council represents a return to that philosophy, you know, him being a really strong defender, him being able to get buckets at the rim and not necessarily a shooter. I like the fact that he's not a prolific three-point shooter. I like that. And there was an interview that was done with 24/7 Sports with him after he committed to Kansas. And he basically said that, you know, and this is his quote, "They see me as a point guard or combo guard, and whoever gets the ball can bring it up and go. They want to play fast, similar to when they had Frank Mason and Devontae Graham, and that's how Self is looking at the backcourt." That's Melvin Council's quote after he committed. So if you can have Council potentially be the Devontae Graham to Darren Peterson's Frank Mason, or vice versa, however you want to look at that, I think that's a great win for Kansas, because, yeah, you're going to want the ball in the hands of Darren Peterson as much as possible, and he's probably going to be bringing the ball up the court a lot. But in times where he's not, if you can give it to Council and you can have Peterson be off ball and find him that way, man, I think that that's a great combination. So I'm in on that for sure, and I'm also in on what he can do defensively.
I think Jaden Dawson is a shooter. I don't know how many threes he took a game, but he shot a high percentage. The other guy, Trey White, that they brought in is not a shooter, but it has a lot of size. I'm going to guess he's also, as a 6'7" guard, going to give them an opportunity. I don't think they bring, I'm going to guess, without knowing, that he's a high level defender. Again, this happened while I was out of town. So I think the trend we may be seeing is athletic dudes that are willing to defend.
Absolutely. Now,
But where's your offense going to come from? Darren Peterson can't score 40 points a game. If Flory Badunga is...
I mean, he can. Athlete, he can score 40 points a game.
Not in college, he can't.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you're not going to put that on his shoulders, but I...
It doesn't matter. Could. Like, he... It's unfair to... Like, even if he's Cooper Flagg, which is ridiculous and unfair, he's not... He's going to need a lot of help offensively. right? Like that doesn't happen in college basketball, especially for freshmen. So the offense is going to have to come from somewhere. They still need offense, right? If Flori Badunga is a defense first guy, and I think he is, if two of the three guys you've brought in are defense first guys, and I think that they are, that El Marco and Jamari McDowell probably are prospects that at one point you thought will have, you know, would be scorers. When we'll see with those two guys, I'm very intrigued by those two guys. But Peterson right now is going to need, they're going to need something else offensively. And so, you know, you look at it now and then you go back and we look at where are the transfer. There are still players out there who are high level, you know, type players that are uncommitted. Darian Williams, we saw at Texas Tech. There are guys that fit a need, right? To provide a little offense. I just don't know what it's going to look like right now for KU as far as that load. And right now it's all on the shoulders of a true freshman. That makes me a little nervous. I'll admit.
Well, it's not now, all on the shoulders of a true freshman. I mean, you've got Flori Badunga that can be, you know, absolutely productive and take a big step forward offensively and, you know, defensively for that regard. To me, I think, you know, my priority is probably where I'm focused on a little bit different than yours. And I mentioned it before. It's a backup big. It's who can play when Flori gets into foul trouble. It's not if he gets into foul trouble. It's when he gets into foul trouble. That will happen. So who are you riding with in your front court when Flori Badunga can't be on the court or when he needs a breather or whatever that is? That's my big question mark. I don't have any concerns at all about a production issue from the backcourt. I mean, I think between Peterson and Dawson and McDowell and Jackson, you know, they just get counsel. Like Trey White, like I've got no issue with production in general offensively. For me, it's what are you going to do in the front court behind Flori Badunga? That's my big priority.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear you say that because offense, I think, has been the struggle for this team for 2 years now. But, you know, getting shots, getting offense. I think, look, Darian Williams is sitting there. I don't know why he's leaving Texas Tech, but he plays a position they need and does a lot of things offensively that they need. You know, there are players out there. And this freshman that they're bringing in this weekend, you know, a 6'7", 250-pound top prospect like that, he could also. But then again, it's a freshman. We'll see. I don't have like a hot take on how their offseason is going. I think it started with Flori Badunga, and in getting him back is, you know, makes it successful. For sure. Now I think they need to just be strategic, and that's been hard for them to do. That's why I think some of these players are interesting. But let's not pretend either. Like, you know, last year they went headline. You know, they've had the headline guys with Storr and Dickinson and Rylan Griffin that did. But they also 2 years ago went for the more mid-major level, you know, guys to come in, and that didn't really work either. Nick Timberlake, right? So It's got to be like a attitude thing this year. If it can't be so X's and O's, maybe it's attitude. And that's where I think a guy like Melvin Council Jr. you see and you're like, okay, there's a dog, right? He's got some of that dog in it. Like you can just tell like that mentality's there. And I think that's not a bad idea at all. I do think they need a little offense through the portal, though, still. And they've still got, what, four roster spots and tons of money, and they'll go find it. They'll go find one. They'll go find somebody. Maybe they get this other freshman to reclassify this weekend. But they've been making a lot of moves early in the portal. We'll see. K-State? Not so much. We'll get with Tim Fitzgerald next hour about that, as well as Joel Lamerno as the Wichita Thunder return for the first time in a while to the postseason. We'll have that as well. Your comments and calls, it's all coming in another hour of Sports Daily right after this.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, for another hour of Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you on a Thursday. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Max Power in with us. He's got your calls at 869-1240. Want to give a shout-out to Crestview Country Club. Appreciate their support of the program. It is, I don't know what I'd call it, golf weather today, Tommy, but we are mixing in some days where those 36 holes of golf sure do look nice. If you're like me, you get out there and you try to play nine of them at a time. That's kind of been my thing. But it is, we are getting into that season. We talked about your trip to the Masters. That's behind us. It's officially golf season. It's officially golf season.
Yeah, it is. I had the tournament on that's going on this weekend, the RBC Heritage, which is usually the, or always at least, the tournament that is immediately following the Masters. And I had it on in the other room just a little bit ago, and I'm standing there during the commercial break, and they show Wichitan Adam Hadwin. They show Wichitan Sam Stevens, like in a like 2 minute stretch. I'm like, all right, let's go. Like, we've got some local flavor in this tournament, the RBC Heritage, that's happening this weekend. And then it made me think about, hey, I want to get out and play golf as soon as I can. And Sam Stevens, by the way, is a Crestview member. And so, yep. You know, a little bit of a connection there on the PGA Tour with Sam and all of that. And every time I drive by the course, and I drive by twice a day on my way to work and on my way home from work, I notice how green everything is getting. The rain certainly helps that we got last night, and a little bit, you know, this weekend it looks like that'll help green things up too. And then you've got Easter. I mean, they're doing a bunch of cool Easter activities. Are you guys doing the Easter stuff this weekend?
No, we haven't talked about it. Aren't they like dropping eggs from a helicopter or something?
Like, usually, I mean, they always do a kids Easter egg hunt, and my boys love it.
Which is chaos.
It's a lot of fun. But this year they're stepping it up a notch. They're bringing in a helicopter, like a legitimate helicopter, to drop Easter eggs out of that helicopter. So I don't even know what that's going to be like. It's wild. It's crazy. But that's what Crestview does for you.
Yeah, it's the family events are outstanding. This might be the first Easter brunch we've missed since we've been there. I don't know. This will be fourth time we would have had an opportunity. I remember, and shout out to my daughter's birthday today.
No, which one? Coco.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Coco.
Middle daughter. Happy birthday. So we just one more anecdote. Like, when we first joined, we let them know that they made a special plate. They brought out a cake. They made it very special for her. So again, it's that's the family thing that I always talk about. These events, like their big Easter thing, like it was during their Easter event, which is massive. It's one of the bigger events that they put on every year. They took the time to give her a special plate, a stuffed animal, like a little special piece of cake and a candle. And they said, like, it was great. Great family vibe. Tons of great families out there. So give Crestview a call. Again, we keep mentioning this, but it's coming. We're going to give you an opportunity to get out there and play a little golf. Maybe it'll be with us. Maybe it won't be. But an opportunity to check out what we're always talking about in the coming weeks here as we ramp up the golf season and the busy season out there at Crestview. Your video comments are welcome for us, as we got a couple of guests in this hour coming up. Joel Lamerno joins us next. Thunder back in the postseason for the first time in 4 years? 21.
Yeah.
2021 was the last time. So we'll have that. We'll also have Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider. What in the world's K-State up to in the portal? I don't even know. We'll have that. We also got calls available to you at 869-1240 and your video comments. Rick chimes in. Our great Royals fan, Rick, says, I don't get Jacob's fascination with MJ Melendez, a career 216 hitter. I don't think I have a fascination with MJ Melendez. I think I just, like, the reality is he's there now, and I think it's more likely that he's a meaningful contributor as a corner outfield than, say, Hunter Renfro. I think the upside's a little higher. But yeah, what is the upside? A 220 hitter with some pop? Maybe. I mean, maybe that's all he is. At this point, it is probably all that he is. But if he can get you the pop, there's some value there. But we'll see. It's another year where he started insanely slow. And the Royals, they're going to have these holes until they get closer to the trade deadline. And if they're not going to play Jack Cactus, talked about yesterday, and we'll talk with our Royals insider Jalen Thompson about tomorrow. If Cags isn't coming to the corner outfield, they're going to have to make a trade for a corner outfielder, because what they've got run out there right now between Melendez and Renfro, it's not working. It's interesting that they've found a spot for Mikel Garcia in all of this. Him playing center field is a wild development. I think at some point, the way Isbell's going right now, you can probably put one of those two in a corner spot. That's still not going to be the production, at least out of Isbell, that you want long-term. Garcia's bat needs to be in the lineup, and they clearly want it in the lineup. So his versatility to go to the outfield, I think, has been one of the real bright spots of this season. But it's a hole. It's a hole. There's no question. To Rick's point, it's MJ Melendez is a career 216 hitter. I think he'd be happy if he got around 220 at this point. I mean, I would, right? If he can give you 220 and 25 home runs, like, we'll just have to take that because that's what they've got.
Yeah, that's why it's so infuriating, at least to me, or frustrating at least, that they didn't make a move for any kind of corner outfielder in the offseason. And I know that there were priorities elsewhere. It was a top of the lineup type guy. It was trying to, you know, figure out the bullpen, and they brought out over Estevez. They were able to solidify their rotation. Like, they checked a lot of the boxes, but man, like, just in, even when Renfro and Melendez started to turn things around last season, it wasn't like they were hitting the cover off the ball, right? Like, they were trending up. Like, they had got themselves back up to, I guess, a mediocre baseline, both of them. But it wasn't like either one of them had, like, flipped a switch and they were, you know, outstanding, lights out in the box. They were able to get back to decent, I suppose. I would have loved to see some kind of upgrade, or at least even not, maybe if not even an upgrade, at least another option. Like, give me somebody else that can play a corner outfield spot that you can at least have a slight bit of optimism around, because I'm not feeling any kind of optimism right now with either Renfro or Melendez.
Yeah, look, I'm going to see if I can pull this up, because I think that's what it is. I think that they did stuff in the second half that made the Royals say, okay, maybe that's it. And for Melendez, maybe it was more of the second half of what they saw in 2023. The second half of 2023, as I'm looking at this, Tommy, he was a 270 hitter. He had 10 home runs in the second half. Last year, it was just a little better, right? He became about a 225 hitter with some pop. So I honestly think that's what it is. They prioritize the other things. And so did I. So I got to be fair to it, because they thought, well, there's no way those guys have that sort of start again, right? There's no way that they do that again, but they are. And so Renfro, just real quick for reference sake, last year in the second half, became a 233 hitter. So it wasn't out of this world, but it got a little better. And I think there's probably just some baked in hope for improvement, but it's not happening right now. And so what do you do? I don't know. Other than play, hope that Isbell keeps hitting and you can play he and Garcia out there at the same time. I don't know what the other options are if it's not Caglione. Caglione has to be another option. Like, you have to see if he can play left field or right field.
They're not doing it. That's not what they're doing.
It's so strange. It's one of the stranger things so far this year. Unless they're comfortable trading him, it's a really interesting thing happening right now, because there's nobody else. They've brought up Drew Waters. Like, there's no other option. So I don't know what you're supposed to do. You got to run at least one of them out there every day. I just don't think there's a lot they can do except hope and pray that one of those guys can get it turned around.
Yeah. I mean, I think that because of the way that they're developing Caglione, is it out of the question that they try to develop him into an outfielder? No, I don't think it's out of the question, but that certainly hasn't been the way that he has started his year in AA. And I think that, you know, I don't think they're going to. One thing that's important about Caglione's development is I don't think that even though there's a clear need, Cotrero and Piccolo especially, I think are looking bigger picture. They're looking more holistically at Jack Caglione, and they're looking more in the future and like how we don't want to impede his long-term development and his long-term potential in the bigs by rushing him into a corner outfield spot that he's not ready for, even though we might need him to do that right now. I mean, I would imagine that, and we'll get Jalen Thompson's take on this tomorrow, but I would imagine that that's a big consideration. And that's really tough. It's tough to stay the course when you've got gaping holes in your lineup offensively and you could use Caglione right now.
And so the elephant in the room with that is, if they're thinking that way, that means they're not thinking about his bat coming up to help this team, because his bat is blocked. Unless Salvi's a full-time DH, right? Or Cags can be a DH, which is look, it's possible. You know, between he and Vinny and Salvi, you just, one of them is always going to have to play DH, and Salvi's going to have to catch more.
You know, I'm reading an article, Ann Rogers, who's one of the Royals beat reporters for MLB.com. This was back in March. This was before the regular season started. She said that Caglione would start, you know, double A for the Royals this year, play first base only in double A. It wouldn't be until he got to triple A that they would start giving him reps in the outfield.
Okay. Well, that's something then. Maybe they're just letting his bat warm up and then they'll try it at that level. We'll see. Look, we'll talk to Jalen Thompson about it tomorrow. When we come back, though, we'll talk to Joel Demurno. Little Wichita Thunder hockey talk. They're back in the postseason. Home games this weekend. Don't go away. More Sports Daily right after this.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you on this Thursday, and we are glad to be joined right now by Joel Demurno with Wichita Thunder, who get back to the postseason for the first time since 2021. Home games coming up. First one Saturday, 6:05, game one against the Tahoe Night Monsters in the Kelly Cup playoffs. Joel, welcome back into Sports Daily. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Well, we're good. We're good. We're excited for playoff hockey. Playoff hockey is, you know, it's not just a cliche. It's pretty hard to beat playoff hockey.
Well, you know, it's funny. I told that exactly what I told my staff on Monday. My staff, you know, they've only been around a few years, and they have not seen playoffs yet. So I just let them know, like, you think that, like, regular season overtime is intense. Dial that up 10 times for every shift. And God forbid we get to overtime, because that is the most stressful. Looks like I'm stopped at a train crossing here too, so that's going to be interesting.
Joel, you know, I think as far as the team heading into the playoffs, we're not talking about, you know, the Thunder limping into the playoffs. We're talking about a number two seed, you know, and an opportunity to really make a run in the Kelly Cup playoffs. What have you seen this season from this team that has allowed them to get to this point?
Well, you know, the big thing, you know, coming into the season, as we brought back Jay Dickman, Mikel Stanell, and Peter Bates, three guys that have, you know, proven that they can put the puck in the net and are typically among the top 15 and 20 in scoring in the league. And this year, are you still there?
Yeah, we're here. We got you.
Okay, gotcha. It looked like I might have lost you. Okay, and, you know, bringing those guys back was a good base. We brought in a guy towards the end of last year, Kobe Walker, as a rookie, and he's really turned into a star as well. So we ended up finishing with four of the top 10 scorers in the league. You know, I say it all the time, goaltending is going to be really important. And, you know, the last couple of years, and I don't mean Trevor Gorsuch, but, you know, we haven't really had the best goaltenders sent down from San Jose. Well, this year they sent us a rookie who turned out to be a star. Not only was he a star for us, had three shutouts, but he got called up to AHL, and last week got called up to the NHL. So a very quick meteoric ride. And Trevor Gorsuch stepped right back in from last year and just really picked up the pace. So having good goaltending every night is probably the biggest key and the biggest thing we've been missing. But we're just very well-rounded this year that we can win games any way by offense, defense, goaltending, toughness, power play. It's one of our best records in league history or your team history, not just ECHL time, but, 41 wins is a lot of wins. I think we ended up with the eighth best record overall in the league out of 29 teams, so pretty good.
Not too shabby. Joel Lamerno, general manager, Wichita Thunder, joining us here. So what can fans expect this weekend? It's Easter weekend, but you guys get a couple of home hockey games in the evening time. What fun things are in store for the folks that can make it out and cheer you guys on in person?
Well, it's playoff hockey. That's the fun thing most of all. I'll be honest. I think most of us feel the same way. I don't think we were planning on playing this weekend. I don't think many of us thought we'd go into Tahoe, and even though we got a great team, it's going to a road trip to a team that's in second place to play three games, probably not going to win all three. So I think we felt like we were probably going to be playing next week for the games 3, 4, and 5. So this came upon us quickly. We couldn't put tickets on sale till Monday. So, unfortunately, the crowds aren't going to be as big as they are on a typical Saturday because you're starting from scratch in the playoffs. So, that part they're going to see is the high energy. We are handing out rally towels on Saturday from Bethel College. That'll be to the first 1,000 fans. We got the Easter Bunny coming on Sunday. You've got to take advantage of any opportunity you can. We had to play on Easter Sunday, so the Easter Bunny's going to be there. Our options for home games were Saturday, Monday, or Saturday, Sunday. Kid Rock is at the arena Friday, so that didn't work. And I think even though it is Easter, I'd rather play on a Sunday night than a Monday. But, a lot of people have travel plans and holiday plans, so, we're not quite sure what to expect with the crowd, but I know that the people that are there will make a ton of noise, and every shift, be prepared. Every shift is hard, hard, hard. You're going to see more hitting than you see in the regular season. Unfortunately, a lot of our new fans haven't got to see this in a few years, so I'm looking forward to everyone getting to see this.
Joel, I want to talk about the coaching staff here a little bit. The faith that the organization has had in Bruce Ramsey, who's been with the team for several years now, to bring this team back to the playoffs. I think that's a huge storyline for sure. And then first-year assistant coach and Thunder legend Travis Clayton coming back and joining the coaching staff as an assistant to Bruce Ramsey. What has that meant? And then just the overall vibe and the work that Bruce Ramsey has put in this season.
Well, there's a few things to this. Bruce has always been a hard worker, and I've said this before to the staff and to people. Having a coach that is a good character is very important. Bruce is a hardworking guy, but he's got great character. And, that's something I've learned over the years you need to have in a coach. And he just makes everyone's lives so much easier. He's easy to work with. The guys like him, and the guys come back and play for him. And, when you think about recruiting, he's recruited some of the best players in the league here. Of the top 10 scorers in the league this year, 6 of the 10 actually play for or played for the Wichita Thunder, which just goes to show the level of talent that he's able to bring in. Travis Clayton, it's a good story. I have stayed in touch with Travis for the last several years. He has been wanting to get into coaching, and I have stayed in touch with him about that. And he was actually going to be our assistant coach last season, but we couldn't get anything worked out with immigration since he is Canadian. So, we talked towards the end of last season, and I said, Bruce, I'd like to bring in Travis as our assistant coach. I know our other old assistant, John Gerskis, was looking to move on and get a head coaching job, which he did in the SPHL, which is one league below us, and he's won his first round playoffs, and he's into the Final Four, so good for him. So, but Travis is again, he's wanted this job so badly that he works really hard to make sure that he does a tremendous job. And, him and Coach played together, so they know each other. And the guys like him. And I've talked to some of the guys, and they talk about what he's brought to the team. So also important, again, I talk about overall I think we're just a very well-rounded team. Now, I know anything can happen in the playoffs. I mean, eight seeds beat one seeds in sports. It happens. There's upsets. But, you know, I feel more confident going into the playoffs this year than I have in a long, long time.
So here's the schedule for it. Joel Lamerno with us, the Thunder, back in the postseason. Two games this weekend, one Saturday, one Sunday. Those are games one and two. And then if necessary, that's if the Thunder don't just roll through this seven-game series in a sweep of Tahoe, they'll play back here next Tuesday. Well, sorry, it'd be two Tuesdays from now. Tuesday the 29th and Wednesday the 30th would be a potential game seven. Joel, fans can go to WichitaThunder.com, I assume, and get those tickets?
Absolutely, and let's hope we're not playing the game seven. That's too much stress, but you know, we get through the series. We're playing in May, which is awesome. And for you stat geeks out there, me, who is one of them, this actually will be our third ever game played on Easter Sunday. Playoff, wow. All three times. And we're 0-1-1 on Easter Sunday. So I'm expecting it to be 1-1-1 after this weekend. And I know my daughter, Cincy, is here, and she's not getting to listen to her kids bop, so she's suffering. But are you excited for Thunder hockey, Sin? Did you want to say anything?
No.
She says no. Okay.
I'm watching a squirrel eat corn that's hanging from a tree.
She's watching a squirrel eat corn that's hanging from a tree. So there's your play-by-play of the outgoings here in Mays, Kansas.
All right. Well, Joel, good luck to your Bengals. They got to learn how to play some defense if they're gonna get anything done next year.
We're going to put up 55, 60 points a game this year, so I think we'll be okay even with a mediocre D.
And allow 58. Joel, fantasy football appreciates them. Hey, good luck this week with the Thunder. Fans, get out there, check them out. You'll have two opportunities this weekend to watch some playoff hockey. We're glad you guys are back in the postseason, and thanks for stopping by Sports Daily with us here.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. See you.
There goes Joel Lamerno, general manager, Wichita Thunder. Tommy's former life. Good to see them back in the postseason, yeah. Man. Playoff hockey's awesome.
Yeah, you know, I spent 2 years working full-time for the Thunder from 2021 to 2023. I came in right after the Thunder had made the playoffs the last time. The Thunder didn't make the playoffs at all when I was on staff. So it's really exciting to see what they've been able to do this year. I'm a big Bruce Ramsey fan. He's a heck of a coach. And, as Joel mentioned, yeah, the players love him. They love playing for him. And the fact that, they've got the organization had faith in Ramsey bringing him back for another year. And now they're on this run in the playoffs. That's absolutely gratifying and well-deserved. And hopefully they're able to make it to the next round.
So you're saying all they needed to do to get back to the postseason was get you out of there?
Yeah, get rid of me. Get rid of their marketing guy. They get rid of their marketing guy, they're back in the playoffs.
Yeah, see, just sometimes a little change is all that needed. Let's stay on a local sports beat here. A couple more things happening today. You've got the NBC World Series making an announcement in conjunction with, have you seen this, with the Wichita Wind Surge here this morning? That is happening, I think, around 11. I don't know what it is. I haven't asked. But I have to imagine if the NBC World Series is making an announcement at Equity Bank Park in conjunction with the Wind Surge, hopefully that means at least some games for the NBC World Series will get back downtown. So I don't know that to be the case. I'm just trying to use my context clues here, and we'll see. That's coming today. That was another little local headline, I think, of some interest. And look, Wichita State's done a really nice job hosting those games. But I do think if that's the case, there is something about having at least part of that tournament be played in downtown Wichita.
Yeah, that was always a huge appeal for the NBC World Series, was the fact that they worked well with, at the time, the Wichita Wranglers. And, you know, the Wranglers would leave town for, you know, a couple of weeks and allow for the NBC World Series to take over Lawrence Dumont Stadium. I know it's different nowadays and you know, you're dealing with a lot of different entities and that sort of thing. So I don't think that the expectation should probably be for the entire tournament to take place at Equity Bank Park. I would imagine that's a little unrealistic. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. Just my guess would be that's unrealistic, but at least some of the games, or maybe a championship round or whatever that is, being played downtown at the crown jewel of downtown Wichita, I think is really important for the park. It's really important for the NBC World Series, and I would say it's important for the city of Wichita too.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Another local headline yesterday, this kind of came right as we left the air. Rick Mumma, president at Wichita State, echoing the sentiments of Kevin Saul with an opinion piece in the Wichita Eagle, basically backing it up and asking for $1 million again. What do you make of all this, Tommy? Like, it's interesting to see the, you know, some sort of blitz here to get this funding. I think the timing could have been a little better, honestly. I think this would have been better to come. I joked with you yesterday, been like, man, it'd been nice to send that out right after that Memphis game, right? Not right before you get, whether it's true or not, and it's probably not, like the perception of the portal and what it can do to you. Every team's dealing with all their players leaving, but it still doesn't feel good. And so, you know, I get it. They need a little more funding. They need a lot more funding.
It's not a little
here's
more
what
funding.
I like about it. I don't, well, but I don't know what funding looks like in higher education. Like, you know, you're talking about $1 million. We're talking about the political scene and how much money is thrown around. And like, I don't know. I just know college is too expensive. That's all I know. So I don't know how realistic or hard or difficult it is. I don't know, but it's $1 million. $1 million is $1 million. I do, though. Here's what I appreciate about the letter from Saul and this opinion piece from Mumma. The very pointed efforts to paint Wichita State as a premier basketball program in the country, not as a, we want to be competitive with our peers in the American Athletic Conference, not any of that. No, elite, right? They need to be in that top 25 category every single year. And I agree with it. That's what I like about this. Like this, you know, now whether the results so far under Paul Mills have been good enough, we can debate that. I would say that they haven't. The university obviously is very happy with them. Wins and losses wise, it's a big year, I think, in that regard. But I appreciate the desire to paint the program there and make no bones about it, right? Here's where the program can and needs to be. And it's good for the, like that. That's the part of it I like, because that's the part that's true. It's absolutely true. Like, they need to be selling out Charles Koch Arena the majority of the time with a program that's consistently right around the top 25. They do. And if they don't, it's not been successful enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, I think that regardless of the timing of it, regardless of the appetite from the fan base to contribute, you know, I do appreciate the transparency of it. I do appreciate the honesty from both Kevin Saul and Rick Mumma. I mean, you know, they're calling it like it is. They're not sugarcoating it. They're not saying, hey, yeah, look, like we're good. Like, what? It's, we need this. Yeah, this is where we're at right now. And whether or not the reaction from the fan base and the donor base and all of that is positive and they're willing to step up and support this, I don't know. I think the jury is still out on that. But at the end of the day, they've been very direct and very open about the need. And it's a unified front, which I also appreciate. There seems to be a coordinated effort in making sure that, you know, all of the ducks are in a row and they know this is how we are communicating this, that we believe we are a premier basketball institution at Wichita State. And this is what we're going to need to compete on this level and get us back to where we feel like we should be. So I do appreciate that part of it. I think time will tell. The jury is still out on whether or not, you know, that sort of effort is reciprocated by the fan base and the donor base.
I don't know where this portal stuff ends, but it's math. Wichita State does not have to pay football players. It's math. Are they ever going to generate as much through NIL as KU or K-State does? Of course not. But they also don't have to pay football players. I don't think it's unreasonable for Wichita State to be in the NIL market in college basketball at the same level, not as KU, but as some of the teams around them regionally, like Oklahoma State, right? Texas Tech has blossomed into this power. But when you've got 85 fewer players to pay through the portal at that level, when it's essentially, when we're talking about NIL, right? Men's basketball, women's basketball, and baseball. I think baseball still fits there. At least it does here. They ought to be able to do a lot of good there. And so we'll see what they can do. But it has to start somewhere. And that's been the challenge. You have to get to that starting line. Maybe they really do feel like it's there and they're on the right track. I would tell you that, you know, again, 10th place and 8th place in the American Athletic Conference that's been watered down is not there, not even close. But you got to get there.
Yeah, I just,
and you got to get there to motivate fans.
I just wonder, I think my major concern is with this messaging and with this, you know, sort of onslaught of letters and opinion pieces and all of that. Are they shouting into the abyss?
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And joining us now, digging deep into something, is Tim Fitzgerald.
What's
Tim,
up?
K-State. Portal. Are they digging deep? What do we think so far? Three players in, from what I can tell. Two of them moderately highly touted. We wondered what was going on with nobody going out. Now everybody's sort of going out. Doug McDaniel out, Brendan Hawson out, Onyeso out, Buddy Rich, we did think would be out, is out. So what is this looking like for you? Are you satisfied with the players that are coming in? Do you think they're going to get into the mix for some blue chippers? Where do you stand with the portal so far?
I'm a bit confused. I thought retention was going to be an emphasis, and they've had a couple players, notably Brendan Hawson and Doug McDaniel, that we thought were staying. Nothing else has really surprised me, but they've just had an erosion of what we thought would be the returning players, and those two guys were starters. And it's a little confusing for fans because they thought the coaching staff was going to try to keep everyone together. And obviously, they probably tried, but they haven't been successful. And the rate of outgo is far exceeding the rate of income. And I think fans know that this is an important season and are a little befuddled about what they're seeing.
Do we know, is there any story surrounding Doug McDaniel's entry into the transfer portal? Is there any speculation as to why? Is it dollars? Are there other programs that are going to throw more money at him?
I think that it was all money motivated. He wanted a number. K-State didn't want to give that number, and off he went, which is, you know, kind of an increasing story in the college athletics world right now with what happened with Tennessee. So, you know, that's a reality that's hard to overcome, that players are just in a money grab. Let's keep in mind that this is the last breath of this corrupted NIL, where you're just flat out paying players. The house settlement will bring, you know, rev share into house, and NIL will have to be, supposedly, if the NCAA actually enforces its own rules, actual name, image, and likeness, which is lending, you know, that to an entity on their behalf and getting paid for it instead of just getting paid to come play, which has always been against the rules, but the NCAA hasn't enforced it.
So what do you think that looks like then? Because nobody, I think we all think there's an end coming. Nobody likes the way it currently stands. Most people think players should be being compensated. So Tim Fitzgerald, gopowercat.com. How do we, like, what is the ideal end game? I've said forever, it's just simply contracts with buyouts and all these things. Is it that simple? Can it be that simple?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, the athletics industry, college athletics industry, is resisting employees because then you get into collective bargaining and it gets a lot stickier. And then you get into, you know, insurance and retirement and all the things that actual employees get. I understand why they're resisting it, but I think it's almost inevitable that these athletes have to be seen in some way as contracted labor. And, I don't see any way around it, but we're in a situation now where everything's in such limbo But we're going to head to a little bit more organized and structured system in the future, which will mean one thing. Schools will just go back to paying players under the table. I mean, that's where we're headed. The money won't necessarily stop flowing. It just won't be through, you know, announced arrangements that we paid this guy $500K to come play a season. They'll just pay him under the table and go back to that system, which was also flawed.
I want to look at this from Jerome Tang's perspective and kind of a big picture look. You know, he went on record, you know, saying that ideally he would love to build a program like what Kelvin Sampson has done at Houston. I'm sure everybody would love to build a program like that, but really valuing long-term development, not having to go and rebuild a roster every single year, et cetera, et cetera. And it seemed like initially when we had that first period where there weren't players that were entering the portal from K-State, like, all right, he might be able to have a little bit of continuity here. I would imagine that this is a little bit of a gut check for Jerome Tang, knowing that even though ideally he wants to do it a certain way, just the reality is he's not going to be able to.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. They're pulling out all the stops. They've got a coach overseas that's been scouting quite a bit. I think we're going to see some international players on this roster next year to add to it. It's just a really competitive market. And as he knows darn well, you got to have money to get players. They did that last year, and they got the players who just wanted the money. This is the minefield that is NIL in the portal. I contend that if a player's motivation is get the most money from whatever school it is, they're not picking on anything other than that for the most part, you don't want those guys on your team because they're not motivated by team. They're motivated by purely financial reasons. I'm not saying it's not okay to go get the biggest contract, but as long as it's part of a bigger picture and you're bought in. And I think the teams that have found a way to find the players that are bought in despite an NIL number being met are the ones being successful. And the ones who are just paying players to come in like mercenaries who really don't believe in your cause, well, they're struggling. And I think that's been K-State's problem.
Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, joining us at Life of Fitz on X. I want to talk a little football here, Fitz. We noticed this earlier this week because it's just impossible to follow. A couple things that I noticed that I just became aware of is that, A, Texas Tech is the top transfer class as of right now in college football, which is pretty wild. Colorado is the next highest Big 12 team, but is a top 25 transfer class, which tells us Prime still seems to be fully committed. Kansas is right around 25, which I think is good for the state of Kansas. K-State's not really up on this list anywhere, but we didn't really expect them to be right there. A lot of their dollars went to retention. What have you made of K-State, the Big 12, the league, and what's happened in the portal?
Y'all have to find, every school has to find their own path, what works for them. And for Chris Klieman, I think we've seen it. They're doing a good job of maintaining their roster and not letting schools raid their roster. The dollars are aimed internally where they can, you know, build some continuity and then bring in some players around that. I think we're going to see some transfers come in and have an impact. Tech's just a different situation. They had a wealthy donor decide to, you know, chip in a number of millions of dollars, a rancher out there, to do this right before all this settlement sets in. And that's what a lot of schools are doing. They're trying to load up. They're trying to change their narrative, so to speak, and get some momentum going. And I think Tech has attacked this in a very interesting manner, and we'll see if it works or if they just went out and found a bunch of guys that wanted the highest number. I think the portal is really good for rebuilding, but it can also lead to fool's gold. So I will be interested to see how all this plays out, although Tech has brought in a ton of talent.
I do have one other basketball question, shifting gears back to that really quick. The first commit for Kansas State in 2025, Ashton McGee, reopened his recruitment yesterday, decommitted from Kansas State and Jerome Tang. Is there a story behind that you've been able to find? What happened there?
We're not sure at this point. It happened, you know, last evening, and we think it's a matter of just kind of mutually, they decided, hey, this wasn't the right thing. But also part of it is a member of the staff who had been here last year. This was his connection, and now he's an assistant coach at Louisiana Monroe. Surprise me if this young man ends up there. So looking at this kid's film, there's an upside to him. There's no doubt. He's hyper-athletic, but he's really raw. And K-State was his only really significant offer, and I just don't know why K-State offered him if, at the end of the day, they didn't really want him. This is not a good look for K-State, even if it's the young man backing out, because he didn't have a lot of other offers, so he'd prefer not to go to K-State over nothing else tangible. It's just not a good look at all, right before signing period, that you cut a kid loose, or the kid cut himself loose, probably for reasons that were motivated by how he was being handled by the coaching staff. There's not much positive news out of K-State basketball. Both the transfers they got are solid players, but boy, it doesn't nearly stop the bleeding for this program.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough as the high school component of it all. It might be the most difficult when you're not talking about the elite, elite blue chippers. Where do the rest of them fall? I think some of these smaller schools are going to become feeder schools, which is, good for their chances to get really good players. But I don't know what else these young guys are supposed to do to catch playing time.
Yeah, no, and you're exactly right. The problem for these smaller schools is they're going to get a young player, and they're going to have one good season out of them.
Yep.
And, as soon as they develop them, they'll have one good year, and boom, they're in the portal. I don't blame the kids. And that will continue even in the revenue share, because these smaller schools won't have that.
Right.
So you'll be transferring to have them, basically a monthly salary. So it's just the way college sports is now. The courts have forced this. It's just been kind of unchecked. And the chaos will continue for a little while longer until the House settlement kind of finds its, place. And then let the cheating begin, because we're going to go back to that system.
Yeah, and right, wrong, or indifferent, right? These guys earn it, so it's hard to fault the players.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, if you're worth what somebody's willing to pay you. Fitz, we appreciate it. Go find everything at GoPowerCat.com, and we'll talk again next week.
Thank you, boys.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. Always a pleasure. Yeah, I don't know where this all ends up. It's complicated. I same thing I'll always say. The chaos will end. It has to. I don't know how yet exactly, but it's hard to keep up with. I will say, though, when the season starts, it hasn't prohibited me from enjoying anything any less. I think I enjoy the off seasons a little less. Some people like the chaos, like this free agency period every year. Some people are intrigued by it. I'm not, but once the games start, I'm all good with it. Tommy, real quick, as we wrap up our final full segment, Royals Lorenzen, Reese Olson tonight, who's not been very good this year. It's a big opportunity for the Royals. 5:40 first pitch, by the way. I gotta get one here. You gotta go get one, especially against this team. It's too early to really look at or care about the standings, but right now Detroit's been off to a good start. They're 10-7. They're at the top of the division. If you need a motivating factor, go. There they are. They're your first place team. You can overtake them with a good series.
Yeah, Lorenzen's been okay this season for the Royals through his first three starts. He's one and two, right? He hasn't, for sure, as your fifth starter, he's been okay. An ERA under four, he's averaging just under six innings a start. And so, you've got to be able to give him a little bit of run support, and it would be fantastic, because this hasn't happened in a minute. It'd be fantastic if the Royals offense can give him a lead to then turn it over to the bullpen, so they can have, a little bit of a set path to a win tonight. I know that's asking a lot for Kansas City, but if Lorenzen does his job, which he has done through the first three starts, even though he's 1-2, they've got to get him some run support tonight in Detroit.
This is an opportunity to do it if you're going to go up against those Detroit pitchers. Reese Olson's not been very good so far. Go get him.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for a Thursday edition of Sports Daily today. Our thanks to Wichita Thunder General Manager Joel Lamerno joining us to talk about Thunder hockey in the playoffs. Our thanks to Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, talking K-State. You can catch all of that if you missed any of it by going back and listening on the free Odyssey app. Tonight here on KFH, Wichita State baseball on the road in Boca Raton taking on Florida Atlantic. We've got all the action for you. Rich Eisen follows us next. Jim Rome at 2. JR Sport Brief at 5. We'll be back tomorrow for another edition of Sports Daily. Our Royals insider, Jalen Thompson, joins us to talk about the Royals and everything going on with them. For Max Power, for Jacob Albrocht, I'm Tommy Castor. We'll see you tomorrow.